Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. This is Chantal.
Hi, Chantal. This is Ed.
Hi, Ed.
I'm down in Georgia.
I'm in Georgia as well.
How are you? Whereabouts?
I'm in Kennesaw right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm still at work.
That too.
Where are you?
I'm in Augusta.
Oh, okay. Hello.
Hi, this is Dave. Welcome, everybody. How are you doing?
Good.
Where's
hey,
Ed?
Dave. This is
great.
Ed.
Great. Thanks for your promptness. Let's talk about the kind of questions or comments that you have from the first seminar and from the exercises and work pages that you've done in the outline and in workbook. Have those exercises and work pages helped you further your thinking about your business and your branded business? Any experiences you'd like to share?
Point of clarification, I have the outline, the handout that goes through all the lessons. Is there something else that I missed?
At the end of the outline, there are some exercises and work tools that go with that seminar, ones that I thought would really bring alive and crystallize some of the things that we've talked about. And I would recommend for each of the seminars that you do those exercises and work pages for that seminar, if you can, prior to the seminar, because that way we can talk about any questions you have and you'll see what you've done and see how it applies to what we then discuss.
I am so sorry. I missed that completely.
Well, that's fine. You can catch up, and that's why the recordings are there, to catch up in case there's something you want to go over again. Anything from our initial seminar that you have thought about or that has been puzzling or illuminating that you'd like us to talk about briefly before we move into the seminar today?
Well, for me, since someone else is talking,
And this is who?
This is Ed. I'm sorry.
Ed, welcome. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. It was more just, it kind of lit the fire. I'm really excited to jump into today's. I've already set up a website and a blog and taken your advice on those other things, and so really I'm kind of ready to push even further.
Well, terrific. Your email is Palmetto Life Coach. Are you in South Carolina?
I'm on the border. I'm in Augusta with the ultimate goal to get back home to Charleston. That's why I said
okay. Got it.
I'm believing I'm going there.
All right. Okay, great. Well, good. I'm glad it was a catalyst to begin to think about some things. And the things that I'm presenting and will present are ones that I think are just useful to really think about, to have in the plan of what you do, and to have an idea of creating a game plan for going forward. And usually the last thing we think about is applying it to our business and looking at coaching as a business, as a brand. And I want to emphasize that and about how important that is and how important that is for the success of you and for your clients. So other thoughts or questions or things you'd like to discuss before we move into the material?
I just wanted to, this is Myra.
Myra, welcome.
Thank you for sending the bridge number. And
okay, yeah.
I wanted to follow up on my question last week about whether or not we had permission to print the document. I tried to print it, and I tried to print it after your OT guy, Bill,
right,
sent me a copy, but it also printed as gibberish. And so, again, I was just wondering if we would have permission to print this.
You absolutely have permission, and the intent is so that you print it and can make use of it. Contact him again. There's something going on about the interface of your computer with the system that he'll be able to figure out. He's a great IT guy. So any questions you have about any of the technical details like that, contact him. His email is bill@coachtrainingalliance.com.
Okay.
If you happen not to get a response from him, send it also to support@coachtrainingalliance.com, and Bernadette may be able to help you. So send it to both, and you know, kind of blitz them, and somebody's going to respond. So I don't know what the problem is. I gather nobody else has had that problem, right? You've been able to download and print your the PDF of the outline and work pages?
Correct. I've been able to do that with no problem.
Okay. Something's going on.
Yes,
Bill will be able to help you figure it out. It may be your operating system or something about updating, like if you have an Adobe system. I have no idea. I've already exceeded what I know about 30 seconds ago. So,
okay.
But I know he'll be able to help you.
All right.
One of my early mentors said, never speak more clearly than you think, and I violated that then. So other thoughts or questions that you guys have that would be helpful for us to talk about? Okay, well, I'm going to move right into the material then, and we'll have some time at the end to discuss and jot down any questions or clarifications that you have or things you'd like to talk further about. Because I want this to be a very practical, applicable process for you to really make a difference as you go forward in your business. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about the mute. We're going to talk in this seminar about value, about beliefs, benefits, and brand related to value. So first, I want to talk about values and beliefs and how important beliefs are. I want to tell you a story about Nathan Handworker. Now, you know this better be a good story with a name like that. Nathan Handworker put in a new food stand in 1916 in Coney Island. Handworker's hot dogs were pure beef made from his wife's recipe, every bit as delicious as his competitors, but he priced his at 5 cents, and the other hot dogs were priced at 10 cents. He attracted no customers. People wondered if his hot dogs were inferior. They attributed poor quality ingredients to his products, since it was half the price of the others. His sales were not increased when he offered free root beer and free pickles. That just furthered the perception that the value must be substandard. Then, Handworker came up with a new ploy. He asked doctors from a nearby hospital to stand around eating his hot dogs while they were wearing their white coats and stethoscopes. And he raised his price. His hot dogs started selling. People assumed that if he were charging full price, and if physicians were eating his food, it had to be good. They began selling really well and became a national phenomenon. Nathan's famous hot dogs. They still exist today. The point here, the value that we attribute, the belief, can fundamentally change how we perceive something. Creating a new belief is not an instantaneous thing, it's a process. It can take some period of time. The process is changing a belief. And it's a process, not an event. It can be planned, though, step by step with incremental progress. Now, for you, it takes however long it takes. It's your process, not anyone else's. Don't compare your inside to somebody else's outside. Don't compare your journey, your timetable, and your progress with someone else's. It's uniquely yours. It's not a competition. Your story, however long it takes, you can make it worth it. So in changing your belief and the result of the change in your action, you also change your mind as well as your brain. And remember this, beliefs are the software that drive behavior. We now know that beliefs can actually turn genes on or turn them off. Remember this equation, first for yourself and then for your clients, because I believe it'll be helpful. and you see this in your outline, beliefs drive behavior, behavior drives performance. So look at any area. If you have a client, or if you in your business are seeing a performance and have an assessment of a performance that's not as much as you would like, that's not optimum, look at the antecedent. Look at the behavior to see what needs to be changed. If the behavior is compromised, then look at the antecedent there, at the beliefs, to see what of your beliefs need to be changed. And here's a brief little aside here as a coaching demo. If you're stuck, or if your client's stuck, and you say, what I want is, whatever you fill in the blank, as a coach, I would say, what would I be able to observe in your behavior to know that? See how I'm looking at how belief drives behavior, and behavior is directly driving performance. What behavior would demonstrate that you are acting to do that? So this equation, I think, can be really useful. So look carefully at your beliefs, your assumptions about your coaching business. They're ghostwriting your vision. For example, tell me your assumptions, and I'll tell you how much money you're going to make. Now, let's look, since I mentioned it, at the monetary value of professional coaching. There are some statistics about the monetary value of professional coaching that are already in. Three recent business impact studies by the Lore Institute, L-O-R-E Institute, and one by the Manchester Consulting Group, demonstrated an average of six-fold return on investment for dollars spent on professional coaching. That's $6 return for every dollar spent. This is especially useful when you are offering coaching, say executive coaching, where you kind of have to lead with your left brain. You have to look at return on investment and all the logical and other reasons, as opposed to life coaching, where you probably lead with your right brain. But these statistics show how valuable it can be when we reduce it to the metrics of return on investment. So why will clients pay you to talk with them? Now, here are some things that are not the answer to that. So in other words, I'm going to suggest if you have any of these words or concepts in your hub statement, lose them. Here are some things that are not the answer, that people will not pay you money for. Confidence, clarity, meaning. Here's some other things that are not the answer to get enlightenment, growth, contentment. If you've never had a new client to come to you and say, I want transformation or I want enlightenment, then you may want to delete it from your hub statement. People don't talk that way because they don't think that way. All of these reasons that clients do not come, they are the epiphenomena. They're the results, but they're not the reasons. The clients will get all of these benefits. They'll get enlightenment, growth. They'll have an experience of change and transformation, but that's not why they come to you. Why? Because that's not the pain points. Why will clients pay you to talk with them? That's what you need to think about. What will somebody pay you for? To work on issues. They're stuck and can't see the possibilities. They've plateaued and need to break through to another level. They have a life or a business challenge and need to co-create perspectives and strategies. They may be unclear about their goal. Why would a corporation hire you to coach one of its executives? Some reasons? Because they're stuck. And they need coaching. The reasons that someone will pay you are the things that they can't do or be themselves at whatever level. But when you begin to think about presenting what you do in terms of a HUD statement, or whether that's an announcement for a service or a product that you have, begin with pain points. Let me refer you to something, because this is the best example I know, and I'm personally familiar with it because I just did it. let me refer you to a landing page that is for a teleseminar series, and I want to point out one thing about it. The landing page is mentorpath.com/neuromarketing, NEUROMARKETING. Now, you probably are not at a computer and won't look it up, or won't be looking at it now. I mean, what I want you to notice is that this is an illustration of what I think is the most effective marketing that you can do, to begin with where the client is, to begin with pain points, to begin with the challenges of the client. Often, when somebody asks you where, you know, what you do, or you know, ask you a question about, you know, what your work is, you begin by talking about yourself and all the benefits that you bring or the features of coaching. Think about answering in terms of pain points. Think about presenting something to somebody in terms of where they are, not with where you are. So what I want to point out about that page, there are a half dozen bullets that ask questions of professionals. And these are to crystallize issues that professionals have. And then it talks about the benefits of the seminar series, and each of the bullets correspond with the bullet for the pain point. In other words, the first pain point, the first challenge that somebody has is answered in the first bullet of the benefit. So there's a correspondence, a matching there. So that's what we want to talk about, is what the client situation is, about the value of the results, the benefits. So two applications here. Know the situations and the issues clients will hire you for. And what I would suggest is that you think about your ideal client, or think about two or three prototypes, two or three avatars, characters that you've developed in your mind that are your absolutely ideal clients. What are they likely to say about why they need you, about what they can't do or be themselves? What are they likely to say that you would respond to by, that's exactly what I do in coaching? And the second, from your perspective, if you were to follow a client around a day, what were, if you just had a, you know, invisible camera, what would you see that you'd know that they have a problem or that they're stuck? And where and how they could soar? So be thinking about this in terms of behavior. That's what we do in coaching. We convert this into a here and now, the choice architecture of the present moment. What is the behavior that indicates they have some issues or some struggle or some problem, that they're having some problems with stuckness? And what are they doing that's working, that are major, major aspects of successes for them? So I want to add a concept here about energy signatures. Every belief and every behavior has an energy signature attached, positive or negative, attracting or repelling, fostering belief or instilling doubt. Your belief of your value has an energy signature attached. The beliefs and thoughts that have a powerful, positive impact will attract clients. Right now, get a pen. And I want you to write down two things, just immediately, first thing that comes to mind, because that's going to be what's emotionally more salient, not after you think about it and do logic and reading. First two things come to mind. The two most positive, engaging aspects of your coaching practice. Write them down right now. Okay, examples. Oh. Positive energy signatures. I know the value of my services. I trust my intrinsic value. I trust my intuition. I have enough. I'm prosperous. My ideal clients will hire me, and I know I'll help them reach their goals. I know I'm going to be effective. Now, second thing, as it comes to your mind right now, think about the first two doubts or concerns about your coaching practice. Write them down immediately. A couple of examples, and if we had time, we would handle this in a seminar way, and I'd get your feedback, and we'd talk about it, but there's so much, I just don't have time for us to do this, unfortunately. But an example of a negative energy signature, setting fees with an attached scarcity signature, like, clients probably can't afford my fee, or I can't charge what I'm really worth. I don't think I have enough experience. I don't think I have enough credentials. I should charge less so that she'll hire me. Now, reflect back on your own experience, how you felt with each of the two sets of thoughts. The positive, engaging first two, and the doubts and concerns of the second. We're always teaching people how to respond to us. Whenever two people engage, the one who influences the other is the one with the most confidence. And what people buy are not your services, not your products, but they buy a state of mind. They buy the state of mind of confidence, of belief in them, because they know that they're going to be able to believe in themselves as well. And confidence has been shown to be a significantly more effective success factor in business than competence, even. There's been some terrific work on. In fact, my last blog is on confidence. If you're interested in looking at it, go into my website and go into the tab on blog, or just mentorpath.com/blog. So, create your value. The most important person to convince about your professional value is yourself. When you value your services, others will too. To position yourself as a professional, you need to come across as a professional. Clients hire you when they believe in you to help solve their needs. But if you come across as uncertain, overly accommodating, subordinate, over-deliver, undercharge, any one of these, you implicitly communicate doubt. People buy a state of mind, not your services, not your product. They buy a state of mind. Why do you think entertainers are paid so many multiples greater than educators? Because they change people's states of mind. For example, in the marketplace, if you don't ask for much money, you're not going to be perceived to have much value. In the marketplace, if you don't have much value, you don't get much money. So, how can you become more valuable in the marketplace? Successful coaches are focused on their clients and the needs of both clients and prospective clients. A key element to focus on the three things that offer the greatest return on your investment: time, money, and training. This means giving up the temptation to be all things to all people. Identify your top three coaching services that you want to focus on. Leave the other areas to other coaches and other firms. Fine-tune these services to position yourself as an expert. Don't get sidetracked or distracted by all the business opportunities you might be passing up. Here are some value development questions to really develop that. What can you help people to understand that without you they wouldn't have? What is your core message, your good news, your aha? Now, here's an example. It's probably the best value message in history. At least it's the most productive, the most responded to in all of history. And research has validated the numbers here. I'm going to give you a few seconds to think about what it may be. The value message, most productive, most responded to in all of history. What do you think it's going to be? Think about it for just a minute. The best responded to message since the beginning of history. The message paraphrased is this. Y'all know you messed up. Don't worry, it's on me. I got you covered. You recognize it? It generates more donations than all other nonprofits combined. It produces the perennial best-selling book. The core message? Salvation. The good news giver? Jesus. Here's an internal memo regarding value application. An internal memo to yourself of three aspects on applying value. One, a clearly articulated value position. Benefits that potential clients and referral sources can readily understand that addresses their challenges, their pain points. Look at that landing page. That's not about feature. The second set of bullets, it's not about features, about what all it's about, and about, you know, all of my experience. It's about the benefits that address the specific needs and the specific challenges and the specific pain point. There's a matching there. And it's about the benefits somebody will get when they sign on for that. Now, secondly, in this internal memo, a rigorous approach to the 80-20 rule. 80% of your revenue and referrals come from 20% of your clients and referral sources. These are the ones who value your skills and services. Regularly review to identify your 20% and focus on expanding your effort with those higher yield. Those 20% will produce way more than 80% of your revenue. And this sounds so simple, but I do a mastermind group of the people who have done the New Life Story Wellness and New Money Story Mentor training with me, and invite, you know, certain people to do a mastermind for a year. And each person will be on the hot seat. One of the people, this last Friday, on the hot seat, was looking at all the people. She has a parallel network marketing business in addition to her coaching practice, and does extremely well, one of the best people in the country about it. But she was lamenting the fact that so many of the people who signed on, she wants to help. And she was mentioning 80 or 90% of the people, she wants to help, but they don't do anything. You know, they sign on, they just don't do anything, and all of her revenue and all of the benefits come from the 10 or 20% of people. And what the group wisdom evolved to say, that 10 or 20%, that's 100% of your focus. The other people who sign on, you know, everybody needs coaching, but you have to have a client to coach. And you don't have a client because they've just signed on, but they're not producing. They're not who you need to focus on. Third, a methodology to separate true prospects from all others. Both your clearly articulated value proposition and identifying true prospects will keep you from chasing unproductive possibilities. So, how do you shape your delivery system based on what you want to give people? It's by understanding three things. Your value, to do what, and to get where. Client attraction to value, the first one. Four tips for attracting new clients, regardless of how fast or slow the economy is. One, ask your potential clients and referral sources what their biggest obstacles or challenges are, their pain points. This can be done in an email, in person, a survey, during the discussion after a presentation you do, or with business associations. Don't assume you know, but ask. If somebody asks you at a networking event or at a social event, what do? You know, your natural inclination to say, well, hey, I'm Dave Kruger, I'm an executive mentor coach. One way to answer is, I want to answer you by asking you a question. What is the greatest challenge in your life or your business right now? And whatever they answer, that's exactly what you do, because you're a coach. You're a professional coach. Two, also ask what their biggest desire is. You know, where would you like to be a year from now? Three, create a service or program that will address both the obstacle and the desire. use the most common responses from your question about obstacles and desires to inform how you fashion a solution that people will pay for. And this can be done by a survey. You know, for example, I do a retreat with a buddy for CEOs who are within a year or so of retirement. It's called What's Next Exec. There's a website for that. And we did surveys of executives about what are the greatest challenges that you're anticipating? What are you assuming? You know, they assume they're going to play golf and have a great time, but they know in the back of their head that's going to last maybe 2 months, if that. And they know they're lively, active. They're going to want to make a contribution, have a second career, you know, do things that are orchestrated and planned, but they have no idea what. And that's what the retreat's about. That's what we did a survey for. Here's the secret. Obstacles and desires are two sides of the same coin. An obstacle is the mnemonic of a desire. Obstacles reveal desires. So let me say that before you. Show me an obstacle, and I'll show you a desire. So instead of figuring out a way to sidestep or overcome or go around the obstacle, consider not creating it. When somebody is ready to recognize, and here's the key, the coaching key, when somebody is ready to recognize that they create an obstacle, they're ready to recognize or consider the possibility of not creating it. And four, take away the risk. It assures potential clients or purchasers to let them know that you guarantee the results. And like for a teleseminar series, offer money back. You know, what have they got to lose? Let's talk about value attribution now. I want to tell you a story. On a January morning in 2007, during rush hour, an ordinary-looking guy dressed in jeans and a baseball cap took out his violin in a subway station in Washington, D.C. For the next 43 minutes, he performed one of the most challenging pieces ever composed for the violin, Bach's Sonatas and Partitas for Unaccompanied Violin. 1,097 people walked by. He was barely noticed, just playing on a passenger platform like an average street performer. His name? Joshua Bell, one of the greatest violinists alive who regularly performs to sold-out crowds at concert halls throughout the world. His violin, a $3.5 million Stradivarius. I've seen this video of this study by the Washington Post. The D.C. commuters heard a world-class concert. But the value they attributed to Bell's performance was based on their perception of him in a jeans and a baseball cap in a little corner of a subway station. And he wasn't even mugged for his violin. Only one person of the 1,097 people recognized who he was and stood for a while before she had to catch a commuter train and really enjoyed it. Value attribution is our own shortcut, our own heuristic, to determine how we judge what we see, even what's worthy of our attention. Then, the value we assign shapes our perception. So, let's talk then about creating your personal value. A few words on altruistic motives about helping others and not getting paid for it. Three words to be precise. Get over it. Now, I'm not speaking of benevolent acts. I'm referring to a belief system masquerading as altruism, a set of limiting assumptions that interfere with enjoyment, passion, and the wealth of coaching. When you do pro bono work, make it select and circumscribed in time to protect yourself. Another consideration, an example here. I have up to 6 positions for every teleseminar I do that I gift to the executive group of a nonprofit charity. I'm told the benefits are exponential for the entire organization. I hold 2 coaching slots to mentor coach current CTA students. That's about half of my regular fee. So if you don't believe your value, your client will not override your veto of that. Be clear on the value of your work, the value that you bring clients. Use the language invest. Pay attention to the results the clients get. The key to making money is creating value and doing it consistently. People pay you when you add value to their lives. They reward you with what they feel the value is. But you have to ask. Money is simply a symbol of that value. I was consulted by a multinational company to work with an executive who'd gone into a downhill spiral when his supervisory duty, and they didn't know this because it was so inconsequential at the time. He wasn't aware of this, but as we looked at it, the precipitant was when his supervisory duty to two subordinates was transferred to somebody else. This is like a fraction of 1% of what he did overall, but it had a narcissistic injury. It was a wound to him because he valued what he did. His behavior was such they were about to fire him. He was frustrated. He was about to quit. The only question was who's going to do it first. It would have derailed his otherwise stellar executive career. I asked the company how much it would cost them to replace him if he quit. Their estimate, easily $1.5 million. So I had no problem in asking for my coach fee for executives. When you do a presentation, a sample session, or initially engage a potential client, rather than thinking about money and having to sell the client on your services, think, how can I add value? Money and value are both perceptions. Now, here's a way I want to illustrate that. There were volunteers who did a taste test of wines, five different Cabernet Sauvignon wines. Now, as a total aside here, I follow some neuroscience all over the world, correspond with some behavioral economic researchers, but I have never found studies like this to volunteer for. Back to the story. Before they tasted, they were told the price of each of the five different wines. They were then hooked up to brain imaging to see which ones activated their pleasure center more. The result? They subjectively enjoyed the most expensive wine the most and on down sequentially to the least expensive. And the fMRI scans showed the same thing, the greater pleasure activation in their brains with the most expensive wine. Now, the volunteers tasted one wine, but with five different stories. They experienced more pleasure, and their brains registered it when they were in a more expensive story. So, figure out how to bring value to others, how to provide them with benefits of your service or product, and you'll be rewarded, but you have to ask. And don't mark yourself down by lowering your fee. You're not a clearance sale. In the film Ruthless People, Danny DeVito's character Sam Stone said, "A bad salesman will automatically drop his price." If you view coaching as where you get your satisfaction rather than your money, you can set up different ways of serving people where you can earn money. You don't have to be there. You can earn it while you're sleeping. If you place wealth as a goal, or one of your goals, and if you have a contradictory belief that the pursuit of wealth is materialistic, you have conflict. Neuroscientists tell us that about 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. That means that we can write two stories simultaneously. We have a surface story, such as, I want to generate more income and create wealth. If we have a shadow story, that we have a belief system that ghostwrites behavior according to that shadow story that says, well, I don't really think I have what it takes. I don't think I deserve more. I think having more money is unspiritual. So there's a surface story and a shattered story that are exactly in contradistinction to each other. Wealth will not accrue contrary to a value that opposes it or to ambivalence about it. And each person decides how to define money. Each person creates a personal definition or lets others hijack the agenda and determine the meaning. An example of some money equations. Some people think of money as a reflection of their self-worth. Not really. Money is a reflection of their efficiency. Net worth equals net efficiency. Action gets you money. Efficiency keeps you money. Now, let's talk about a good idea versus a goal. Establish goals for yourself, your business, and especially for your income. Have a business plan. It's the blueprint of your business. There's a model in the of a business plan in the outline in the handouts that you have. It's estimated that at least, I'm sorry, let me say that a different way, coming from different regions. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. So what's the difference between a good idea and a goal? Two things. Measurement and time. Where and when, the travel agent questions. Where you want to go, when you want to get there. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by 5 p.m. December 31st, 2014. Here's a good idea. I want to make more money. Here's a goal. I will generate $220,000 from coaching and $215,000 from products and royalties in the next 11 months. Here's a good idea. I want to save more money. Here's a goal. I will set up an automatic deposit of $300 per month, the first day of each month, from my checking account into my retirement plan. That's an example of having to make or making one good decision that lasts for a lifetime. You only have to decide once. You don't have to debate it every month. There's also an exercise on strategic goal pursuit in the outline. Now also, I'd suggest, write a breakthrough goal, something that will stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, and move you to a higher level, something you haven't imagined before, a quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs and every August riding on the coast of Maine. Now, you're going to substitute your own goals there. Then, reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. Actually, those things work. Last November, I spent the entire month in a Creole cottage in the French Quarter, New Orleans, writing on my next book. It actually was better than being in Maine in the summer because it's where I went to medical school. I loved the city. I got to jog and stuff in the quarter every day, write. It was terrific. So have a stretch goal. Then reread your goals. Regular and breakthrough twice a day when you go up, when you wake up, and when you go to bed. So what exactly are you afraid of? You didn't have a book on the New York Times bestseller list before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get it rejected, you still know. So what do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. Take a chance. Here's a take a chance story. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he would absolutely never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes and talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or from 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? Then he added as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In his first month, he took in $72,500, and in his first year, he netted over $1 million. Now, visualization and the law of attraction. Visualization is a way to rehearse for your future. You program the future memory. Visualization brings about actual physical changes in the brain. The brain can't tell the difference between a mental image from an actual image. Same activation patterns. Visualization brings about real changes in your brain. Visualization of complex movements can even improve performance. We know that simply by picturing a danger, for example, we can trigger the entire body response of fight or flight. The law of attraction, as well as neuroscience, tells us that we bring about what we focus on, not what we want. One of the articles that I have under the articles tab on my website is about the neuroscience of the law of attraction, if you're interested in reading it. You're always achieving your vision. It's useful, necessary to know precisely what that vision is. And it's the one you need, and if it's the one you need and want it to be. Visualization does not always involve seeing an image or mental picture, especially if you're not a visual person. In other words, if you're an auditory person, or a kinesthetic person, you may sense it or feel it or imagine how it sounds, or it may be a set of thoughts and ideas. It's the experience of the success. When you expect and imagine limitations, you create them. Remember, from neuroscience and quantum physics, we get what we focus on. We direct our brain's focus by the questions we ask and by what we decide consciously to focus on. So, when beliefs and assumptions include problems or obstacles, these get incorporated into the vision you live out. You're always putting forth a vision of what you expect to happen and living it. Put forth a clearer request of yourself, of what you really want, consciously shaped and realistic of your specific goals. Here's the key to visualization. You do not make a brain change permanent unless you incorporate it into your story. In other words, it has to be incorporated as part of your identity. The most powerful force of the human psyche is that we revert back to our identity, whatever changes we make, unless we incorporate it into our identity. So, otherwise it doesn't register, it gets extruded as noise or relegated to a footnote. This is why I believe, for example, 95% of people who diet gain back their weight. They don't reprogram their body image. For example, as you see yourself in a successful business, you create the specific imagery to live that experience. You then incorporate it as part of your identity. Your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture. But your conscious mind can, and your conscious mind must incorporate an evolving story to include and assemble the imagery as part of the story. So otherwise, the unconscious message will delete access or believability of the images. So there are three key elements. One, specificity. Be very specific about the experience of achieving the goal of success of your coaching business. Two, repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision have to be renewed and repeated regularly or they'll be eliminated. And three, program new identity. Consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story to ultimately be metabolized as part of your real self, your true self. Otherwise, you'll lose the vision. There's also incorporated in your addendum a chapter from a book of mine, Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction manual. It's on the old art and the new science of visualization. And I'd suggest reading it. It includes a section on the art and science of affirmations as well. Affirmations reprogram mind software. Visualizations rewire brain hardware. Now, a margin note here. Write it down for review. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory, then it's gone, unless it's emotionally significant or unless you work to log it in. And here's an example of how visualization can be effective. Basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into three groups to practice shooting free throws. One group, no practice for a month. One group, 30 minutes of practice daily. And another group, they practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws, nothing but net, for at least 5 minutes a day for 30 days. They were tested at the end of 30 days. The first group, no practice, 0% improvement. Second group, actual practice for 30 minutes daily, 24% improvement. The third group, practiced by visualization only, 23%. And subsequent studies have eclipsed that to show that there is greater improvement by visualization because you don't make slight mistakes and then have to recalibrate, it's much more effective. And again, on brain imaging, the same sequence of firing occurs with visualization as with actual shooting. Now, if you don't have a purpose for each dollar that you have or will have, you may not have the dollar. A goal enhances motivation. You know this from coaching. Whenever you help a client set a goal, it enhances motivation. And someone does not have to be motivated to do something. They just need a plan to stick with it. A strategy also enhances focus. So deadlines may crystallize the work to complete requirements for the deadline. And maybe if you didn't have the deadline, the work would have dragged out. Possibly. Economics and wealth work in the same way. If you do not have a clear, crystallized vision of how you will earn, manage, and ultimately use each dollar. That dollar may not manifest. A final emphasis on something I want to just cue your radar for, value in gender, and that's overcoming mental barriers to equal fees. In a recent study in the Harvard Business Review, Mary Davis Holt reviewed her work with several hundred women executives to focus on their income. She found that in some instances, women had to overcome organizational barriers to get equal pay as men. They had to ask for what they wanted and deserved. Holt emphasizes the need for many women to look at internal barriers that are at least as common as the external ones. So this is also for the guys, because you're going to be coaching women. In order for a woman to get to the top, she may have to overcome some of her own deep-seated assumptions and behaviors that may interfere, like the downloads from early on of being a helper in a major role, or not taking the lead to initiate new business. This is not about women relinquishing values, but unlearning certain notions that may have been unconsciously downloaded from early on that can masquerade as values. For example, if you believe deep down that self-promotion, competition, and winning strategy are unbecoming to a woman or anathema to who you are, this may need examination. These beliefs and behaviors may be coupled with being incensed by a failure to get a raise or shocked by an evaluation that accurately reflects this behavior. And consider also something that I've written about before. A girl that's raised in a traditional family in which the ideal of a female is loving, giving, nurturing to others, to the exclusion at times of her own needs, to succeed at living up to this ideal would result in the failure of her own growth. To succeed, she would have to fail at living up to this ideal, resulting in shame. So that's a dilemma. Shame is the feeling that results in not living up to one's own ideal. In coaching, this self-concept is part of the software revision that comes in establishing goals and strategies and successfully living into them, and the accompanying change in self-concept as these changes are programmed into a new identity. Let me just mention as a footnote, a number of years ago I did a study with a colleague for one of my professional books, The Last Taboo, Money as Symbol in Reality. What we found was that women therapists charged significantly less than men therapists with similar education, years of experience, and geographic location. What Holt in the Harvard Business Review also found was how much a worker loses over a career by not negotiating a higher salary in the beginning, even slightly higher. Surveys suggest that an overwhelming majority of men ask for higher salaries. In fact, a book I want to recommend to you, that I think that is just dynamite, that I've just finished, is called The Confidence Code. And the two authors, both journalists, talk about a number of things having to do with women and confidence. Some of the composite studies, that confidence is a greater predictor and determinant of success than competence. And one of the examples they used, is that in studies with business school graduates, men initiate salary increases 40% more than women do. And when both ask, women ask for 30% less than men. They interviewed Marilyn Davidson from Manchester School, Business School in England, and she said that she had been doing these surveys for about 7 years, and every year there had been massive differences between male and female responses. The male students expect to earn significantly more than the women, even when you look at what the students think they deserve to earn, the differences are huge. So I'm mentioning that to be aware of with your clients and to be aware of with yourself. And Mary Davis Holt concludes by saying, the ability to earn what you're worth arises from a set of skills that will improve with diligent effort by any woman who sets out to master them. And I'll, of course, add, by any man as well. Now, there are a couple of exercises in the addendum at the end of the outline that apply to this seminar, especially two that I want to highlight, strategic goal pursuit and 11 steps to ignite change. So I'm going to put us on discussion mode for questions and conversation. Okay, what would be most helpful to talk about? And first, are there any questions and clarifications about anything we've discussed so far? How does this sound to you? I'm interested in your responses and what your questions and thoughts are about it. How much you thought about it, how much you think about it in terms of your practice, your fees.
But Dave, this is Ed. I this has really helped me think about how focused and specific I need to become. The whole conversation about if I don't have a plan for every dollar, it may not materialize, really hit home. I tend to think in big, broad terms, and I need to work on the very specifics. So that was very helpful.
Yeah, that's it. That's the first thing we do when we hear a client thinking in big, broad terms is we want to shrink the change. We want to look at the plan, but we also want to look at what are the next steps and what do you do now and next. And that's exactly where we focus on in coaching, and that's unique to coaching, is the choice architecture of this moment and a collaborative model. Let me tell you a brief story about, how we need to look at, you know, what the next step is. Terry Fox ran the Marathon of Hope, a 3,339-mile run across Canada. He was asked immediately after the race, because he ran with a shuffle and a hop because he had an artificial leg, how did he manage to keep going when he was so challenged and had thousands of miles ahead and must have been very tired? He said, I just kept going to the next telephone pole. And that's an ideal model. And I mention that story again because it's a model of looking at the next step and being clear about the next step, because that's the thing that's going to be most beneficial for our clients and for us in planning, is to get that traction and to have the effectiveness of the next step. The most basic desire that we have as humans is to be effective and to look at a specific plan and structure and a model that we can effect that kind of mastery. That effectiveness can be especially useful, and it's one of the fundamental things that we do as coaches, is to help someone move toward a specific and concrete and tangible plan that's specific, that's measurable. Not something vague like more is not a number, later is not a time, but something specific. And the resultant experience of doing that. Yeah,
David,
yes.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead. I was just thanking Ed for mentioning that because I think it's really important. Please, go ahead.
This is Myra. I like your point. I like it, and I'm challenged by the point about reprogramming my identity. You know, I realize with that statement that I have reprogrammed myself from being an undergraduate student to a graduate student, reprogrammed myself from graduate student to professional. Now I'm thinking about that, what will it mean to reprogram myself from my current profession, which is I'm an administrator at a university, to be a coach. That ties into the what's the next step approach. I'm challenged by that.
And think about how that's something that we do with every client, that we help a client incorporate the change and the transformation they make into the model of how and who they are, which is to say their identity, and that's what makes it permanent, that identity change. You know, for example, someone is going through a process of change and experiencing anxiety and trepidation. If they read it in an old model, then anxiety equals danger, better head back for cover, and it makes sense to stop, because stopping immediately treats the anxiety. If, however, we empathically resonate with that and look at it in terms of helping them evolve a new model, we help them recognize that could I get a management of the background noise? There's noise that your receiver is picking up that you're not hearing. And if you're not speaking, would you mute, please, star 6? a mute, please, star six. Let me go back on lecture mode because I want to make this point without us being distracted. If we help someone go through an experience of change and they experience anxiety and trepidation with that change, that's, of course, what we expect because that's the way our minds and brains work because our brain's error detection mechanism is reading, this isn't the usual way of doing it. Our brains have wired a pathway to repeat the things by automatic mode, by default mode, the things that we do normally, like we drive to work the same way each day, so our brain creates neurons and pathways to make that automatic, but we don't have to think about it. We try something different, or the traffic's jammed up, or there's a roadblock, we have to snake our way through neighborhood. It takes energy, and that's something that we resist. So whenever anybody, every client you have, will at some point experience anxiety and trepidation about change and about moving ahead. They need to interpret that in a new model. And the new model is, this is validation of moving ahead, a signpost of being in new territory. This is what I can expect. And they can know that because you're resonating empathically with them. You get it that they're experiencing anxiety. You're helping them reframe that in terms of a new model of change and transformation that they can then incorporate as part of their identity and part of an expectable experience of this change, even as validation of it. So they're able to move ahead and ultimately download that not only as their own identity, their new and evolving identity, but as a model that they can use so they ultimately won't need you, because that's the end in mind that we have in the beginning, is so that someone can download the model of working with us so ultimately we won't need us there to do that, to incorporate that whole process. Well, thank you all very much. I'm sorry I had to put us on lecture mode again, but I wanted to be sure that there wasn't interference. I'll send out a note about being sure that background noise is managed so we can have our discussion time. Thank you all very much. If there are questions or things that we didn't cover, jot them down. We'll talk about them next time or send me an email. So thank you all very, very much. I appreciate all of your input and energy, and I'm truly enjoying putting together these thoughts and ideas for working with you and the stimulation of your questions and thoughts. So keep it coming. Thank you. Bye now. Have a great rest of the week.